Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at KFARradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. This is a pre-recorded show, so there will be no phone calls, so I'm not going to give you the phone number, but we have Governor Dunleavy in the studio here with me. How you doing, Governor?
It's great to be here in Fairbanks again, Mayor.
Well, thank you. You know, you're getting ready to set a standard that hasn't happened since the 90s, and that's a governor being reelected. You're doing well in the polls. You've done a great job. How does it feel? You know, you have two people sort of nipping at your heels or trying to do things, but you're doing great.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, and I'm sincere when I say this. The election isn't over till it's over, and I'm going to urge everybody to make sure they get out and vote and understand this new ranked choice voting. It's going to be very important to make sure that your wishes are recorded during this election. So, nonetheless, but yeah, right now things appear to be going in a good direction. But I was a college basketball player, and I remember several times we'd come in after a halftime break, and we'd be up by 10 or 12 points, and some of my teammates would be high-fiving each other. I'd say, we still have a second half. The game's not over. And so we just want to make sure that we get our message out to all Alaskans as to what we've done and what we believe Alaska could be over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And so that's what we're doing now for the remainder of the campaign.
You know, you've been through a lot as governor. COVID, you know, you did not shut down the state like many states did. You know, look at California. Look at the state of Anchorage. You know, what their municipality did. It was great. You wouldn't do that. You know, you got wise health in front of you. You were able to get critical medical items here because you picked up the phone.
Yeah. And, you know, we worked hard at keeping our industries open, like mining and oil during that time, as well as fishing. There was a big concern that the fishing industry would be a hot spot for the virus. And that didn't turn out to be the case. We learned from what happened down south in the meatpacking plants. We worked with coastal communities. We worked with health. We worked with others. And we had a very, very, very low incident of COVID. And I don't know if there was a recorded case of COVID coming in from outside, in other words, the processors themselves bringing COVID to Alaska. You know, David, as we sit here today, Alaska has the second lowest death numbers of any state in the country, just after Vermont. We were supposed to get hit pretty hard. We were supposed to get wiped out, actually. There was supposed to be some predicted a repeat of the 1918 Spanish flu. But because we all worked together, that didn't happen. And as you said, we didn't shut down the entire state. We didn't shut down the economy. We just asked people to, you know, distance from each other and just be smart about things. The other thing about Alaska is we have the highest survivability rate of any state in the country. That means if you got the virus anywhere in this country, your chances of surviving it were better in Alaska. And so are these things to be proud of? You know, when you talk about a pandemic, you can't take a lot of joy out of any aspect of it, obviously. It totally turned the world upside down. But I would say that it could have been a lot worse. I think Alaska, and I give a lot of credit to Alaskans for pulling together during that time.
Yeah, and your administration was on top of it, working hard, working with the private sector, and looking for solutions. As I recall, you know, everything was shut down in late March and everything came back online in a formatted, planned way in mid to late May, whereas California, Oregon, Washington, they were out for a year, year and a half.
Yeah. But
we were, you know, Governor, you led the nation, actually, and I'm glad I can look at you here in the studio and say, you did it. It was only 2 months and you had a great plan of let's reintroduce people being Alaskans and get this going in, and I thank you. It was a lot of things were off the shelf for a year. We didn't have baseball up here for a year, so I missed that. But we got back to normal really fast.
Yeah, we did, and you know, there's still some ramifications from the whole COVID issue. We're talking about labor shortages, for example, supply chain issues, and we had talked about this during the actual height of the pandemic, that it's going to look like we're going to get through the health aspect of this pandemic, but we really got to keep an eye on some of the other other issues that are associated with it. Like I said, labor, supply chain issues. What the future is going to look like. Personally, I think the future for Alaska is really, really bright for a whole host of reasons. And if you don't mind, I don't mind transitioning to talk about this. But
not at all.
When you look at the lower 48 right now, some of the basic issues are at question. They're having a long-running running drought. The West has basically been in a record-setting drought for years. Unfortunately for the West, if it keeps going for another year, there may be such a drop in water levels in some of those reservoirs that produce electricity, like down by Vegas and Hoover Dam, et cetera, that they may have to stop producing electricity for the first time since those dams were created. Here in Alaska, obviously we have a different issue, and it's not a drought. We got a lot of rain. But we kind of should celebrate the fact that we have more fresh water than any other state in the country, because right now there are actually investors looking at Alaska, especially for the prospect of agriculture here in the state because of our water resources, our land resources, our proximity to Asia. And so we've got a lot to celebrate up here in Alaska. We just got to make sure that we keep our focus, grow this state. Welcome people to this state, welcome investment to this state. And I think if we do that, Alaska's future is pretty bright.
Very true. You know, and you look at the pandemic that happened, and then a month ago, storm of the century hits Norton Sound.
Yeah, yeah. So they got hit with a pretty good storm, remnants from a typhoon that had struck off of the coast of Japan. And there were a number of communities in western Alaska, all the way down to the lower Kuskokwim Delta, lower Yukon Delta, up to Norton Bay, and some of those communities got hit pretty hard. Nome lost miles of road and some beachfront. Gullivan was hit pretty hard on their spit. Houses were knocked off the foundation. Houses have been ruined. They've been water saturated. It was Elam the same way. The front street of Elam was hit pretty hard. But I got to say, we've been out there twice now in the past 3 weeks.
You were out there the day after it happened. You were on site.
We were pretty quick getting out there to make sure that we had eyes on the ground. We brought our National Guard General Sachs, our emergency director, Brian Fisher, as well as Ryan Anderson, our Department of Transportation Commissioner. We've all been out there at least twice. And we want to make sure that this recovery is happening. We just had another storm hit the northern part of the state, Barrow and Point Hope, in that area. And there's been some minor flooding up there. We're going to be working with those folks as well. But you know how it goes in Alaska. It's the last frontier. It's
you expect it.
It's an amazing place, right? Earthquakes, floods, fires.
Volcanoes.
Hopefully not.
Sorry for mentioning that. I apologize. I didn't mean to bring that one
hopefully
up.
Hopefully not.
Polar bears.
pandemics, you name it. But what's great about Alaska, you know, David, somebody asked me, a friend of mine back east that I knew when I was in high school, said, why do you stay in Alaska? And he said, you know, I know it's a beautiful state, but what keeps you there? And I really told him, I said, it's the people. And it's during these tough times where the people pull together. I mean, we're sitting right here in Fairbanks, and in the late 60s, you had a massive flood here that changed the whole complexion of Fairbanks. And we don't give up. We don't quit. We help our neighbors, and that's what makes this state great.
Fairbanks, we are going to take a commercial break. Got a few commercials here for you. Again, this is a taped conversation. We will not be taking phone calls. I have Governor Dunleavy in the office, and we'll be back after these messages. Welcome back, Fairbanks. David Prue's in the studio here. Again, this is a recorded conversation. I have Governor Mike Dunleavy in the studio with me. We had a couple guests arrive in Savunga at their peril, you know, and that's Alaska. All of a sudden, you have issues from Ukraine and Russia spilling into Alaska because we're the closest neighbor to Russia.
Yeah, North America. We're 2 miles, 2 miles from Russian territory and 50 miles from the mainland. But yes, when Putin called upon the Russians to be mobilized for this war that they've started here in the Ukraine. Obviously, you've seen the news clips, but a lot of folks don't want to fight in this war. And so some of them are leaving through as many exits as possible in the country. And we just happen to get two individuals who, you know, you got to give them credit. They had a lot of guts going across the Bering Strait there. And they landed in St. Lawrence Island and turned themselves into the folks there. They were retained in the local jail on the island for a couple days. And then they've now been moved down to Anchorage, and Homeland Security is trying to figure out what to do with them. We may see more of that. Obviously, you don't see it very often. It's certainly not like the border between the United States and Mexico. But nonetheless, it does remind us how close we are to Russia. I mean, I remember having a conversation with some governors at a conference. And, you know, I said the governor of Ohio or Iowa, they don't have to talk about Russian incursions into their airspace every so often, being chased off by our
Canadians are bad people.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But we are on the frontier with regard to Russia. We don't know how this war is going to turn out in the Ukraine. It's an unfortunate situation. I hope cooler heads prevail. I hope logic prevails. But we just got to keep an eye on this. We just got to make sure that this doesn't go south and turn into something that all of us hope never happens.
True, but it also highlights the strategic importance of Alaska, both in location for defense and minerals.
Yeah, and it's about time because, you know, as we know, Alaska has a large military presence. We love our military. We have the highest per capita rate of retirees of any state in the country. But what's going on now in the world and the way the world seems to be reorganizing itself geopolitically, I don't think we can rely on pack ice to protect us from the Russians. We have a great Air Force. We have a great army. But I think the discussions are occurring in Washington, and it should have occurred there a long time ago, that we may need more of a presence here in Alaska. Because, you know, there's forts all over this country, David, in Texas, and North Carolina, California. But Alaska is truly the only state that's on the front lines. We are truly on the front lines. I mean, we have the Chinese coming up through the Bering Strait. We have threats from North Korea, and we are very close to Russia. And so we've got to have a serious discussion as to how we're going to protect this country, North America, and Alaska going into the next 50 years. And I would not be surprised at all if we see more of a military presence here. I think it makes sense. And I think Alaska is going to step up to the plate and do what's necessary to accommodate a larger military.
You know, I was with you yesterday at the CTC building downtown Fairbanks, the University of Alaska Center, and you brought up a lot of good things that are coming online. Oil,
mm-hmm.
hard, heavy oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're blessed with resources in the state of Alaska, and we've been blessed with oil. And so for decades, we've extracted oil off the North Slope, and that's been a lighter form of crude that can be brought to the surface in more conventional means. But we have billions and billions and billions of barrels of viscous oil and even heavier crude oil. And I want to commend the University of Alaska here at Fairbanks because they took on the task of seeing if there's a certain technology that was developed down south that could be applied here in Alaska to move heavy oil. What they do down south more often than not is they use a steaming method to thin this oil out. We can't do that here in the Arctic because we have permafrost. And so a polymer approach using polymers, which is a chemical mixed with water and then injected in the wells, actually thins the oil out. So there was a theory that this would work in the Arctic, but it was proven to actually do the job by the University of Alaska in some research they've been conducting here for some time. And so they've concluded that research on viscous oil is doable. And as a result, there's projections now of up to 125 to 150,000 barrels of oil could be extracted on a yearly basis of viscous oil out of a number of wells that exist already on the slope. What does that mean for Alaska? We don't have to worry about permits from Washington. This is already permanent land. And so this is going to be an additional upwards of 150,000 barrels. We hope more starting over the next several years that we can add to the pipeline. Their next step at the university, and we're going to support them on this, is heavier oil. How to get that heavier oil up, because that's going to probably take a different process. But I have a lot of faith that the researchers here at the University of Alaska will be able to crack that as well. If that's the case, and in 5, 6, 7 years, we're able to get some of that heavy oil moving too, you might see 300,000 barrels, maybe more, being produced out of the existing fields that could go on for decades. This will be great for Alaska. This will be great for Fairbanks. And quite honestly, this will be great for the country, because that means more oil, again, without having to go through this arduous permitting process that Washington is making more difficult.
You know, it's interesting when you bring up permitting. The natural gas line, permitted.
Yes.
Also, I would say that Susitna is about 50 to 75% permitted.
Yeah, it needs to finish off its FERC licensing process. And that would cost that's going to cost some money to do that. But the point is, we have all these energy resources here in the state of Alaska. We've got oil, we've got gas, we've got wind, we've got solar, we've got tidal, we have geothermal. You have geothermal here at Chena Hot Springs. And Bernie Carl's working on a project that I think has a lot of promise out in the Aleutians as well, out there at Dutch Harbor. So really what I think we're entering into a period of time where some at one time may have thought that, after oil, Alaska is going to go into to decline. Well, it doesn't look like there's going to be an after oil. I think we're going to see more oil, which we should. I think our gas resources are going to go to market here, I hope, soon. The Japanese are very interested in our gas. There are investors looking at the gas line. There are builders looking at the gas line. And I will not be surprised if in the very near future we'll be making an announcement that we've got a project that's going to move forward. But a lot of things happening in Alaska, a lot of potential in Alaska. The other interesting thing is, as I mentioned earlier, David, is, you know, we have a lot of water in Alaska. And this commodity is becoming more valuable. We also have a lot of farmland in Alaska. And this commodity is also going to become more valuable as we see investors looking at Alaska to potentially locate some of their agricultural investments here. We want to make this state food secure. We have the ability, I think, to grow a lot of food and be able to export food over time as well. And so, again, we're just scratching the surface on a lot of these things. But I see over the next, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, Alaska coming into its own. And one last thing I'll add, about 2 weeks ago, we were notified that the International Airport in Anchorage went from the fourth busiest airport in the world to now the third busiest airport, international airport in the world, and the first, busiest airport, cargo airport in the United States. So we are now number one in the United States, and we are third in the world.
I like the way your philosophy for government is. With our natural resources, you're getting the permits in place for the natural gas pipeline or the Susitna power. And then you're saying, okay, corporate world, economic world, here it is.
Yeah.
Let's bid on it. Let's see if we can put it together.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is Alaskans know more about the lower 48 than the lower 48 knows about Alaska. It's fascinating. You know, you tend to think that investors know everything there is to know about Alaska. That's not always the case. We've been going to the lower 48 here periodically and talking with potential investors in gas, in agriculture, in mining. And there are inevitably we stumble upon investors that really never gave Alaska a thought, and now they are. And so, you know, last May, we had what we refer to as a sustainable energy conference in Anchorage that brought in a lot of big players. We had former Secretary of State Pompeo speak at that. Former Energy Secretary Rick Perry did a recording for that. John Bel Edwards, Governor of Louisiana, former Governor Ritter of Colorado, and a number of other world-class speakers to be able to highlight Alaska's energy potential, not just for investors, but for those that want to use Alaska as a proving ground. This coming May, We're going to even have a larger conference with more investors coming here. Because of that conference last year, investors are now interested in looking at Alaska. So I think there's a lot of promise. A lot of promise, for example, in storage and cold storage at the airport, too. A lot of promise for Alaska to keep growing as a logistics hub. I think a lot's going to happen here, and a lot is happening now.
As Billy Mitchell said in the 30s, whoever controls Alaska controls the world.
Exactly.
Governor, you've been controlling Alaska the last 4 years.
Well, I would say I've been working for the people to move Alaska forward for the last several years, and a couple great things have happened. Like I said, our crime rates have plummeted again this year. We continue to drive crime down. This is a primary function of government, and quite honestly, we're proud of what's happening. We've invested in our troopers, we've invested in our prosecuting attorneys, our corrections officers, and I think you're going to continue to see this trend continue to go down. What's interesting is our crime rates are going down while the lower 48 crime rates are going to the roof. And one of the reasons I think for that is we don't coddle criminals here. We don't condone criminal behavior in the state of Alaska. We always have a lot of work to do, but right now, David, we believe that where crime is going, we're pointing it right in the direction, and that is lower crime rates, which we're pretty happy about.
Fairbanks, we are going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some weather, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. This is David Pruse in the studio here with Governor Mike Dunleavy. Again, this is a pre-recorded show, so we are not taking phone calls. But you can give me a call tomorrow and ask me all the questions that you wanted me to ask Governor Dunleavy, because I'm sure I'm going to get him again. Isn't that right, Governor?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I got to ask you a question. You just had an election here. How'd that go?
Very humbling. It was very humbling. Successful. It was a year and a half project, and I was very fortunate. Won by a very nice margin, but overall it was very humbling, I must say.
Well,
just humbling.
First of all, congratulations. And I'm going to kind of turn the tables just a little bit, because I'm interested in your perspective. Fairbanks is a great city. It's our second largest city. It's the hub for the entire interior. Great history. Lots of resources in the area around Fairbanks, a great university. What do you see are the things that you might want to affect as mayor going into the future for this great city?
Well, there's three things I ran on. Getting a third ambulance so we don't have stacked calls, and that's an internal. We don't have to hire more, in my estimation, more employees. We have them there, just have to let the fire chief stack them correctly, so to speak. Hire more police, but everyone's trying to hire more police. So we have to get much better in our marketing. We're hiring a person as our public information officer who is also going to be a marketing director for getting more police. And then we've had a weather pattern change here. We get more snow, heavier snow. And so my thought is, We have to budget more for snow plowing and even take it to the private sector in some of our subdivisions. And we have a 3 to 7 day turnaround time for plowing the streets. Plowing the streets is different than snow removal. Get the streets open, have the city do the downtown core, your main arterials. Do it in 3 to 7 days versus 3 to 5 weeks. So mm-hmm. those were the three things that I just highlighted throughout my campaign. And it then seemed like every other person who was campaigning in the municipality was catching on that, saying, he's right, let's do that. I think that really helped me out a lot in my campaign. Just, these are the things as a Fairbanksan I'm concerned about, and this is how I'm going to change it. What I did was I gave exactly how I would affect the change. And here's my plan. And if you like the plan, great. If you don't like the plan, I have an opponent. She wants the same things done, but she's taking a different road. So that was a difference. A very fine person who I ran against, very experienced. But We had two different roads to get to the same location.
Yeah. So, you know, the old adage, all politics is local, I think proved out in your case. People liked your message. A lot of times we talk about ideas at the 30,000-foot level, but in the end, you know, if you have a snow berm in front of your driveway, that's a problem because that hits you personally. And that could be, you know, that's a situation for folks. If local schools aren't performing well, that becomes a problem. And if your emergency services, like you said, aren't operating in a manner that are meeting the needs of the local folks, that becomes an issue. So I think, you know, just listening to you, I think it was a referendum on your ideas. And, you know, I wish you nothing but the best over the next couple of years. Look forward to working with you. But you got a great city here. You got a great city with a great history and some tremendous potential. And we're going to do everything we can to work with Fairbanks to meet that potential.
I appreciate it. You know, we have what I consider six pillars of industry here, and you've highlighted one of them very well, the University of Alaska. We also have tourism. We have hard rock mining. We have gold mining. We have the military. Then you have your overall infrastructure. And when four of those six are growing and doing well, Fairbanks does well. Now, like you've brought up, we have an exterior influence from the U.S. economy and what it's doing to us. So it should be interesting on how we react to that with the increase of fuel costs, with the increase of labor prices, with the supply chain shortage. But like you said, we're Alaskans. We're Fairbanksans. Okay, what else you got? We're going to get through this. And we're going to do it very well.
Yeah, no, you guys are tough. I think everyone recognizes that. You know, you brought up high fuel prices, and that's one of the things I did want to talk to you about is, you know, it's the issue of policy. You ran for mayor. I'm running for governor. There are legislators that are running for the legislature. And really, it's all about policy. And so when we talk to voters, for example, we just want to remind them that you have an opportunity in these elections. Your election was an example. Elections coming up. All these elections, for the purpose of stating who you believe will have the best policy ideas and who will implement those. So when you look at Washington, D.C., for example, and what's coming out of Washington, it's been tough. It's been tough on Alaska. And quite frankly, I think it's been tough on the American people. When we're going through what some call a forced conversion from fossil fuels into the renewable world. And don't get me wrong, I think Alaska should take an all-in approach. Wind, solar, geothermal, hydro.
Tidal,
nuclear, everything. Yeah. There shouldn't be a limitation, an artificial limitation. And we see some of that coming out of Washington. That's one of the reasons why we're dealing with, I think, high oil prices. If you remember, prior to President Biden getting into office, we had President Trump. Under President Trump, we became a net energy exporter in oil. Now we've seen what's happened in Europe with the Russians, but that's being exacerbated by what I think are strange policies coming out of Washington that are impacting Alaska. We should be able to develop our oil resources, our gas resources. We should be able to develop all of our mining plays. You know, that the whole issue of mining and how it touches Fairbanks. And not just Alaska as a whole, but Fairbanks, is if we're going to have this new economy that's based upon electricity where everything is electrified, you're going to need the minerals to do that. And so, you know, what I'd love to see happen coming out of Washington is that the Biden administration take the position that we need to have an all-in approach. We need to have mining in America. We need to have mining in Alaska. Timber, for example, we have 1/7 of the country's timber here in Alaska. We should be able to use that timber resource to be able to lower the cost and make housing more affordable in some cases. And so what I'm trying to say, David, is as your mayor, policy is going to be huge. We have the resources here in Alaska. We have great resources here in the interior in Fairbanks. But good policy is what voters should be really looking at. And that's why I'm going to ask them to study all the candidates and make sure that they come out and vote in November.
You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what you are. You get to vote. And there's always something for you. There's always someone with a philosophy. So other people might not have it. But there's always something for you. Constitutional Convention, Governor, U.S. Senator, House Representative, State House, State Senate. There is something coming up on November 8th that affects everyone no matter what.
Yeah.
And you just encourage people to go out there and vote. Now, we have always about a 20% municipal election voter turnout. But when it comes to the state, we have about a 45% to 50%. So a little bit bigger, a little bit more detailed, but it's good to see. It's as good to see, and we have a wide variety of candidates. You know, your candidates against you, you know, you have a very, very defined Democrat. You have a person who goes Democrat, sometimes Republican, depends what he wants to be. And then there's yourself. And very defined. These are choices, I believe, that if you examine it, there's something for you, the voter, and you have a very distinct choice.
Yeah, exactly. Very important election coming up, not just in the state, but nationally. You know, I like to tell this story because I love history. I was a history major that I think encapsulates everything we're talking about. When the Constitutional Convention was coming to a close 246 years ago, or roughly 240 some years ago, Benjamin Franklin was being carried out of the convention because he was in his 80s. He was not doing well physically. And this woman supposedly yells from the crowd saying, "Mr. Franklin, what do we have?" Meaning, what was the accomplishment? What did you guys come up with? And he, you know, his comeback was, "You have a republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." And what that really means is that Franklin, it was a message for the ages. Franklin is saying to every single one of us, every single generation, if you value this republic, you have to keep it. You have to work for it. And you certainly, at a minimum, should be voting in these elections. And so what I tell people is, if you don't like where a state or a city or a country is going, if you don't like the policies that are happening, you have the ability to affect change. And if you do it, then you are part of what Franklin was talking about. If you don't do it, then you run the risk of becoming a victim of bad policy, or a victim of policy you didn't agree upon. And so I would just once again impress upon the people across the state and here in Fairbanks, you got to get out and vote. You have to get out and vote in order to keep this republic alive. You got to get out and vote to make sure that the policies that you believe in are implemented. Because if you don't, you can rest assured the other side is, and they're going to take advantage of it.
Fairbanks, we are going to take a commercial break. You listen to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial. 97.5 on the FM dial. We live stream at KFARradio.com. I have Mike Prox in the interview, critiquing my interview with the governor, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back, Fairbanks. David Prus in the studio here with Governor Mike Dunleavy, and I got a feeling he's going to throw some rapid questions at me.
You know, David, I'm just curious. What do you like to do in your free time? What kind of hobbies do you have, or pastimes, or interests?
I like to do things with people. Like yourself, I'm a people person. I enjoy going to Creamer's Field. I think it's a crown jewel. I enjoy walking downtown Fairbanks along the river. I enjoy going to Birch Hill. I enjoy finding friends and going to nice dining establishments or cooking in my home for good friends. I enjoy the camaraderie of people. Mm-hmm. And Fairbanks has such a plethora. I know it's a big word for me, but a plethora of different types of people in it. And I just enjoy them all. Yeah. You know, as I was running for mayor, you'd knock on a door, and it was so humbling because all of a sudden you'd see someone you met in third grade, mm-hmm. or someone who worked for your parents and had this nothing but wonderful accolades to say about them. And I just did not expect that in an election. And it was so humbling. And yet at the same time, it gave me such good incentive saying, okay, you're in this. You have, you know, a responsibility to do it right now. You know, the eyes of my parents and a family are upon you. Mm-hmm. The eyes of Fairbanks are upon you. And so I just, my favorite thing is just being in Fairbanks, getting around Fairbanks, being with Fairbanksons and doing things in Fairbanks.
Yes, you know, it's interesting. As I mentioned earlier, when I was asked by friends, why do I stay in Alaska? I mean, I've been up here since 83. You've been up here a lot longer. It's the people.
Yeah.
It really is. It's what makes Alaska special. And, you know, I'll talk with tourists. There are times that I'll stand on the docks in Juneau when the cruise ships are coming in, just dressed as an average Joe. And when tourists are coming back on the ship from their visit in Juneau, I say, you know, why did you decide to come to Alaska, and what do you think? I have not met anyone that did not remark about the beauty of Alaska, you know, the mountains, the glaciers, the rivers. But almost all of them also said the people are wonderful. The people are very nice. The people are accommodating. The people are very friendly. And they said they don't get that oftentimes in other places. And I have to say, that's a hallmark of Alaska. Great place to live, beautiful scenery, but really amazing people. And like I mentioned earlier, you see that, for example, when neighbors are helping neighbors when there's some type of disaster or issue that we're dealing with. And so that's probably one of the reasons why I thoroughly enjoy what I'm doing. It's because of the people in Alaska.
You know, you're so correct. On Thursday, I was having a little lunch at a little restaurant, and all of a sudden I get a tap on the shoulder. And it's executive director of Explore Fairbanks. And he was asking me if I could say hello to six people from Finland who are bringing in tourism and two people from the State Department. And, you know, what I said to them was, you're not a visitor here. You're a family guest. And that's how you'll be treated. When you come to Alaska, we look at people as a family guest, not a visitor. And there's a big difference.
Yeah, so when these tourists come over, it's definitely the scenery they like. That's why that was the initial draw. But they, like I said, they leave more often than not with the feel that Alaska's people are special as well.
Yeah. Now, you brought up something earlier in our interview here, agriculture. And you were able to get a very sizable chunk of new ag land out from the DNR, being it put out into the public for bid, purchase, lease near Nenana, and that's great. But the first thing that happens is you have an environmental group saying, oh, it's going to be bad for the environment. And I was going, everything we do, there is an environmentalist coalition trying to stop it. So I've always admired your persistence of, no, we're pushing this through, we're doing it.
Yeah, we have a problem in Alaska, and that is we import well over 90% of our food.
Mm-hmm.
During the height of the pandemic, there was a rumor that the Port of Seattle was going to close down because workers were getting sick. That would have been absolutely catastrophic for the state of Alaska. So you're reminded that that's always a real possibility. And after that point, a number of us decided that in order for Alaska to be a going concern well into the future, you've got to be able to feed yourself to the greatest extent possible. And Alaska has probably more potential farmland than any other state. Like I said, we have the water. We certainly have the climate. It's interesting, when the University of Alaska was founded, 1915, it was founded as a mining and agricultural college.
Mm-hmm.
Long time ago as an agricultural college. And I think Alaska, like I said earlier, is going to come into its own because we have incredible soils, we have incredible water, we have a climate that can grow many, many different things. And we're going to work with local farmers, those interested in farming, and investors to capitalize on this and make sure that Alaska can produce the food for itself, the crops, the feed for animals, livestock themselves. And so you're going to see more and more Alaska grown, and you're going to see more and more, I think, really great ideas coming out of Alaska's agriculture. And again, the University of Alaska is going to play a huge role in that.
You know, it's interesting. I'm a townie. I live in downtown Fairbanks. But I live in a location called Garden Island because it was the area that was the big garden that fed Fairbanks, you know, from 1905 to 1925.
Yeah.
Now it's called Brandt Subdivision, the Brandt Homestead. You know, like yourself, love history. And you just follow that. Garden Island, what was it? You know, we have the Airport Road, Road to the Airport. University Avenue, it's a university now. Now there's a new road to it. College Road, the road to the college. We're pretty basic. Garden Island.
What about Creamer's Dairy?
Creamer's Field? Oh, yeah. I've always thought that to be a crown jewel for Fairbanks. When you look at it, I go out there with my Dalmatian at least once a week, no matter what time of year it is.
Your Dalmatian?
Yeah.
Not your dog, but your Dalmatian.
Yeah, I'm merely the human in this. He owns the human.
You know the history of Dalmatians, don't you?
Yes, I do.
They were what?
They were a field hunting dog out of Dalmatia, which is just north of Greece, a little bit of the Caucasus.
Yeah, on the Adriatic. And yeah. They're the ones with the dots. They're the white and spotted ones. 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, I get that a lot. They are a very astute dog. They work well with other animals. They're a calming effect. That's why they were with fire stations and different, not zoos, but anyway.
Yeah, no,
this is my second one, and yeah. it's a great breed. They love everyone. You know, you bring out a Dalmatian, and everyone's got to pet the Dalmatian, so it's all about him. It's not about me, but this is my second one. And once a week, we go to Creamer's Field, no matter what.
When I was a kid, I used to see a lot of Dalmatians. They're very, you don't see them very often. You're one of the few guys that I know that has a Dalmatian. I'll tell you an interesting story. At least I think it's interesting. We have heelers, and mm-hmm. we actually got the mother heeler from Fairbanks about 11 years ago. And fascinating dogs. We're a dog family. We've also had cats, but... yeah, we love our dogs, and one of these days I hope to get to meet your Dalmatian. What's your Dalmatian's name?
Berlin.
Berlin.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, my brother Danny, he had these standard poodles, so he named one Boston and one L.A., and I said, well, I'm a younger brother, and we compete. I'm going Old World Capital. I'm going Berlin with my Dalmatian, so is this one of those things?
Pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, what's in a name, and that's how you get to a name. What's next on your... election schedule?
Well, we got roughly what 30
final
days
30 days yeah
30 days left. We're down in the home stretch. Like I said, we're not going to take our foot off the gas pedal. We're asking Alaskans to get out to vote. I truly am excited about the future of Alaska. I think we're seeing more and more investors, not just in oil and gas, but across the board looking at Alaska. I think Alaska's best years are ahead of us. I know a lot of people say that, but you know, I mentioned earlier in the broadcast today, the International Airport in Anchorage is now the top cargo airport in the United States. Our heavy oil is now, our viscous oil is now going to be able to be extracted out of the ground, which means more oil. Our farming sector is going to grow tremendously, just like our mariculture sector is. And we're going to capitalize on all of this renewable approaches to energy. Alaska's got everything to offer: fresh water, beautiful lifestyle, incredible scenery, great people. We're just going to work together, pull together, and create an amazing state for our kids and grandkids.
Governor, I so appreciate you coming in and doing the interview here with us. Not live, you know, I know you enjoy getting the phone calls that come in here from Fairbanksons. That can get very unique, but they're very astute, and I appreciate you coming in here and being able to do it. You got a few seconds left. Anything you want to close on?
No, I just agree with you. I think the people here in Fairbanks are great. I think I mentioned to you at one time that I got my master's from the University of Alaska. I work with the University of Alaska. I've got two daughters that are finishing up their coursework with the University of Alaska. You got a special place here in Fairbanks for a whole host of reasons, and just enjoy coming up here as much as possible.
Will there be a Governor's Cup this year in hockey?
I hope so.
Yeah, that's the best ticket in town to get the toughest one. Fairbanks, you have a great day. Governor, thank you very much. And Fairbanks, I will see you tomorrow.